Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about how olive oil, polyphenols, can boost your cognition from University of Florence in Italy, and how meditation can reduce post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms in active duty personnel from the Medical College of Georgia, and how vitamin B12 is important, especially for young women, and yet they're really chronically short on it, from the Child and Family Research Institute, British Columbia. We'll also be looking at some issues involving health that most people are not aware of, like a life-extending hormone that bolsters the body's immune function, from Yale University, and a lot more. Today, I'm going to also spend a lot of time on public health issues. For example, I want to share with you why it's important to take a look at the pulses. The pulses, the legumes, they're really superfoods, and they're a lot better than grains. A lot more protein, and environmentally, they're a lot better to grow. Also, the trouble with our healthcare system. I want to take a really good look at, for all of you who supported Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, how you're now spending a huge amount above and beyond what anyone thought you would spend and what that means to people. Also, Big Pharma's not so happy today because 80% of cannabis users who have different medical conditions are giving up their prescription pills for the cannabis. That's not good news for Big Pharma, that's costing them billions of dollars in sales. Also today, we're going to look at some other issues, and we're going to be playing some audio clips from individuals, including too big to fail, too big to jail, too big to curtail. Why it's so important to bust up the biggest banks, not all banks, just the big ones that are enormously in debt. Later today, I'll also be having an interview with an individual who will be telling us about the banking system and why it's so important that we learn from this and the derivative bubble that's sitting out there, and it will come due. So Dr. Jack Rasmus, a professor of political economics at St. Mary's College in Santa Clara University in California. He is also an economic analyst, and he'll be on. He's one of those former insiders who can tell us the truth about what's going on. I believe that we are facing literally a cataclysmic economic situation. Not in the way you might think. This has nothing to do with Wall Street. But it does have to do with derivatives. More on that on today's program. Also today, time permitting, I want to talk about the new food safety that they're putting forward and how it doesn't protect our safety at all. It was written by big agribusiness. Dr. Susanna Humphreys will be talking about vaccine safety. The other side of the story they don't want you to hear. And if time permits, if not, then it'll be tomorrow. Who controls the world? Noam Chomsky shares an interview with us on this. So as you see, we have a lot going on. Also, for those of you who want to listen to this program over the telephone, let me give you the number. Now, yesterday, when you were listening in, it was all kind of slowed down. So it sounded distorted and strange. But turns out, so many people wanted to listen at the same time, it overwhelmed their system. Now, this is about the fourth time in 5 years this happens. When you hear how many people, how many tens of millions of minutes people are listening over the telephone, you understand. And this president of the system called us and said they're bringing in brand new technology this week, and that as of today, they can handle this load. But we are number one in the entire Western Hemisphere of thousands and thousands of radio stations and other corporations that use that service. We're number one, North America and Canada, and we're in the top five in the entire world. So that's why you had that problem. Sorry for the problem yesterday. They say it's fixed today, but they're showing us new technology that we can handle millions and millions of people at the same time listening. So that's good. Anyhow, that number, 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850. They say they've never seen a phenomenon like this in their life, this many people listening over there. Well, wait till you hear how many people are going to the website each day and reading articles and watching videos and sharing information on calls to action around the world. And we select topics based upon no matter where you live in the world, it would be relevant for you. Also, I won't have time today, but within the next 5 days, I will be presenting a brand new, in-depth, original investigative reporting piece on death by medicine. And what we've done this time is we've broken it down by the type of drugs and how many people have died since the year 2000 till now. The numbers are staggering. I mean, we're talking into the tens of millions of people. So you name the drug, we'll show you how many have died and why this is so important. So that's all the stuff coming. We have a lot. Let's begin. First up, we're always looking for ways to slow down and, where possible, reverse the aging process. Yale University has discovered a hormone that extends the lifespan in mice by 40% and is produced by specialized cells in the thymus gland. Now, according to the new study by Yale School of Medicine researchers, the team also found that increasing the levels of this hormone called, write this down, FGF21, protects against the loss of immune function that comes with aging. This is big news. You haven't read it anywhere. You haven't heard it anywhere. This is the place where we give you the advanced cutting stage art of this new information. Now, this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And the implications for this are substantial. What it says in lay language is that by improving immune function, you're going to have less opportunity for the diseases of failed immune system, including diabetes and cancer. And the older you are, the more this would benefit you. Now, just a little primer here. When functioning normally, the thymus, T-H-Y-M-U-S, thymus, the thymus gland, produces T cells for the immune system. But unfortunately, as we age, and this is with everyone, the thymus gland becomes fatty and loses its ability to produce new T cells. Now, this loss of new T cells in the body is one cause of increased risk of infections and certain cancers in the elderly. Now, that's why, quote, from the study, they said, we found that FGF21 levels in thymic epithelial cells is several-fold higher than in the liver. Therefore, FGF21 acts within the thymus to promote T-cell production. Elevating the levels of F1F21 in the elderly or in cancer patients who undergo bone marrow transplants may be an additional strategy to increasing T-cell production, thus bolster immune function. Okay, now that might sound like a lot of gobbledygook, but let me break it down and show you it's very simple. When you eat a healthy plant-based diet where you have good raw walnuts, almonds, macadamias, pistachios, pine nuts, filberts, Brazil nuts, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, chia seeds, flax seeds, hemp seeds, when you're having all the full spectrum of fresh fruits, a little bit of dried fruit, like dried apricots are good, And dry cherries are good. Dry cranberries are good. You can take them with you as snacks throughout the day. When you have a good grain, legumes, seaweed, when you have healthy juices, when you have tubers, kohlrabi, rutabaga, parsnips, turnips, lots of garlic and onion, what you're doing is you're providing hundreds, if not over 1,000 different types of phyto plant-based nutrients per day. Now, normally, they will do two primary things beyond giving you the nutrition the cell needs and beyond giving the cell the energy in the form of adenosine triphosphate, ATP, that the mitochondria needs so you feel more energized. You wake up energized. You don't have that morning drop down. You don't have that afternoon drop down. You don't feel like by 2 o'clock you want to take a break to take a nap. You have energy all day. Even in the evening, you have energy. And also, it's feeding the thymus gland. Now, I spent my entire adult life in anti-aging medicine research. And I've done the experiments. In fact, just last week, another one of my studies was accepted for publication in a peer-reviewed journal. I generally don't talk about this stuff. But when it comes out, it'll be posted up on my website and people can read it. And I've had 3 in the last year, and I'm working on a new one right now. So all this is about slowing down and reversing the aging process. Well, we didn't believe we could do either. We didn't believe we could slow down the aging process, or we didn't believe we could reverse aging. We didn't believe the heart could have any new tissue or cells. We didn't believe the brain could have any new cells. Both of those are wrong. We can actually physically change the structure of the brain. We can add new dendrites. We can add new neurons. And the same with the heart. So all of our old anatomy and biology is simply antiquated. It just isn't working today. So what you need to do is you need to stimulate your thymus gland. A plant-based, healthy, clean, wholesome, energized diet does that. Now, what the two things will do is one will detoxify the body, natural chelation. Those are your greens, chlorophyll-rich foods, such as chlorella, spirulina, parsley, wheatgrass. The other are your red polyphenols and phytonutrients and proanthocyanins, and they actually repair the damage to the DNA and energize the cell. So you got cleansing, rebalancing, slowing down the aging process, and rejuvenating. And that's what a clean, healthy diet does with stress management and exercise. And that is why that information from Yale is so important. It's what we do above and beyond that. But at least now you know a starting point. Because when you're eating a processed American diet, you're contributing to the end stage of the thymus gland's production. And hence, you get older, you get sick, you're on an airplane, you pick up a bacteria or virus, which is inevitable, and then suddenly you got an infection you can't get rid of. You get it for months. You get pneumonia, a pneumocystis pneumonia, or a mycobacterium, and you can't get rid of it. But if you have a healthy immune system, you can. And anytime you go on to a subway, a bus, into a movie theater, into a crowded office, into a social event, just very discreetly, quietly, make no pretense of it. You just spray your nostrils with colloidal silver and your lips with colloidal silver. That's all you do. That in and of itself means that any bacteria and viruses which you will come into contact with, the body is going to have them killed at the portal entry, eyes, nose, mouth. And on a plane, you're in a petri dish. It's a very toxic environment. Spray your mouth, spray your nostrils every 2 hours with colloidal silver. It's non-harmful, spraying it on the outside of the body, but it kills over 500 microorganisms. Now, if you want to put a little ionizer around your neck, that's fine. That'll create like a protective shield for about 12 inches around the face. And if there was someone sick on a plane and coughing, I would definitely put a mask on. And not just any mask. I would put a bacterial filter mask on. Would it look a little strange? Yeah. Would it freak a few people out? Possibly. But if anyone asks, just say, I don't want to spread an infection. That's all. You put it on you. And that way they think, okay, good. Separately, eating spicy food is linked to cancer protection and longevity. This should help everyone. And this was from Harvard's Chan School of Public Health. And what they found, and also Network Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Here's the takeaway from this. We all, or not all, but most people like spicy foods. Not just for their punch, but for their tantalizing quality, the kind of peppery flavor. Whether it's jalapenos or red chili peppers or cayenne pepper, they're really good for us. And researchers have now found spicy foods contain a number of ingredients that have been found to promote a healthy heart, protect against cancer, and improve overall longevity. And a new study concludes that people who indulge in spicy food on a daily basis enjoy a 14% improvement in longevity compared to those who consume spicy foods less often than once a week. The spicy food lovers are less likely to die from cancer, less likely to die from heart disease, less likely to die from respiratory complications than those who consume spicy foods most frequently. And it's just that simple. And this was a big study for 7.2 years on 8,404 deaths from 11,800. They found a big difference. And the study results showed that cayenne pepper benefits tremendously. Now, each day I take 2 extra hot cayenne pepper in the morning and before I go to bed at night. Why? It thins the blood. And for anyone out there who's concerned about your heart or having a heart attack, and that should be everyone over the age of 35, always take in just a little container. You can empty out a little vitamin bottle and put in there 5 extra hot cayenne pepper. Put in 3,000 milligrams of magnesium citrate. Put in there 3,000 milligrams of coenzyme Q10. Put in there DMG, dimethylglycine. And that is your, and garlic, black garlic capsules, about 5,000 milligrams. And it all fits in a little tiny bottle. One that you could put in the palm of your hand, close your hand, fingers around it, no one would notice. Now, why is that important? Listen up. This can save some lives. Because if you should be with someone who has a stroke or heart attack, you want to take those immediately. Because they will immediately protect your heart tissue, your brain tissue, and thin your blood. They will help with any secondary clotting, and that's crucial. Now, of course, the wise person says, well, if this was what you should have as your emergency medical kit for a stroke or heart attack, why not just take them daily to help prevent that? And that's exactly why I believe people should. I have thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of people on daily protocols from all the PBS programming and best-selling books and articles and broadcasts. Because the protocol is basically the same. Take that which enhances, improves, keep the aggregation of the blood vessels from coming together, red blood cells, to help prevent the clots. And the older you get, the more you should be taking this in the morning and before you go to bed at night. Why? Because an awful lot of people die in their sleep. They had that stroke or heart attack 2-3 in the morning. And that will help protect you through the night. Now, also today, we're finding more research that red wine improves cognitive performance. This was from the National Institutes of Psychiatry. Quote, wine is the most healthful and most hygienic of beverages, says the great scientist Louis Pasteur. back then, in the 1800s, early 1900s, he was right. They didn't use sulfates in them. They used organic grapes. And you got a better ferment. And you got the probiotic quality, and you got resveratrol. Of course, today, we could say, but if I had a glass of grape juice, organic grape juice, I'm getting more proanthocyanidins, more grape seed and grape skin extract, more resveratrol than in a case of wine. Then I could say, but I could take one resveratrol capsule and get more than in a case of grape juice. And you'd be right in each of those. So yes, wine is good. This was an article published in PLOS One. And what they're finding is there are several classes of organic compounds, such as the anthocyanidins, antho, A-N-T-H-O, cy, C-Y, anidins, A-N-I-N-S, plus tannins, T-A-N-N-I-S, and flavonoids, flava, F-L-A-V-O, noise, N-O-I-D, flavonoids. And by the way, why do I spell words all the time? Because you got to remember, I have people listening from all over the world who may not have English as a first language, who may need something said a couple times or spelled so they can write it down, and therefore I'm giving them the advantage of learning that. And there's no rush. We want to get the information to people so they understand it. Now, why is this important? Because these natural organic compounds, in particular flavonoids, there's your orange, there's your apple, in the skin of the apple, there's your onion, superstar onions, an onion a day keeps a stroke away, and they all have anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, anti-aging properties. Thus, they benefit your health. They also benefit the cellular molecular mechanisms underlying the positive effects of flavonoids in giving us a longer lifespan. So resveratrol, R-E-S, vera, V-E-R-A, trol, T-R-O-L, resveratrol, works on your hippocampal neuroplasticity and cognitive function. So it means you simply have a more pliable brain, more fluid brain, in the mechanisms of electrical charges and connections and synoptic and messages, movements. Plus, you protect your brain. You turn off inflammation in the brain. Hence, you have a healthier brain. So anyone with a brain problem, including memory loss, cognitive diminishment, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis should all be taking resveratrol. Now, you can do it in three ways. You can do the capsule, so you know how much you're getting each day and standardize, maybe 200 milligrams twice a day. You can take grape juice, one glass, 16-ounce glass of pure organic grape juice a day. And you can take a glass of low or non-alcoholic red wine. So no matter how you get it in your system because it's good for you. And that is the latest on health and healing. And we're going to take a brief break and come back, and then we're going to get into a lot of other issues. We have a lot to share with you, including, let me mention this because I said at the beginning, olive oil polyphenols can boost cognitive ability. What we now know is that the olive oil, if it's real olive oil, organic, extra virgin, the newest science from the scientists in the Department of Neuroscience in University of Florence have found that extra virgin olive oil and its polyphenols give strong improvements in coordination, memory, and anxiety-related behavior, and that's important in this laboratory experiment they did. So get your olive oil each day and eat olives each day. Olives are great for you every day. And there's so many different varieties, but give yourself a chance to do that. And for all people who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, from Medical College Georgia, published in Military Medicine, please get them into a meditation class. because regular meditation enables some active duty service members battling post-traumatic stress disorder to reduce or even eliminate their psychotropic medications, which can kill them and cause suicide, and they can get better control of their often debilitating symptoms. And that was the latest study that was done at the Dwight David Eisenhower Army Medical Center Traumatic Brain Injury Clinic at Fort Gordon, Georgia. So half the service men were given transcendental meditation regularly, and the other given their regular psychotropic drugs, and there was a big difference. Almost 60% of those doing meditation found, quote, a stabilization, reduced or stopped taking psychotropic drugs. That is good news. Headaches, memory, sleep, and mood all improve with meditation. Concussion heal, but this is unique concussion because it happened when someone was trying to kill them. It's not like you or I were riding bikes on a weekend and fell down and hit our head. There is significant emotional trauma, hyperarousal, basic instincts of survival. They are having a normal reaction to an abnormal situation, which is being in an environment where somebody is trying to kill them on a daily basis, end quote. But regular meditation provided a calming down, a healing the brain, and therefore helping people who had had those traumatic situations. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We're going to be going to our guest in about 10 minutes, but I want to go over a couple things from our public health mention today, and one is try to get more of the dried edible seeds like legumes, lentils, split peas, yellow peas, all your beans, lima beans, kidney beans, turtle beans, black beans, soybeans, all non-genetically grown. Why? Because they give you twice the protein of quinoa, require one-tenth the amount of water to produce than beef. Pulses are well known throughout the rest of the world, but not so much in the United States, because they're inexpensive. They're the poor person's protein. And also pulses, P-U-L-S-E-S, pulses, are low-water-use crops. Dal, D-A-A-L, is a split lentil, requires just one-tenth the amount of water that an equal amount of cooked beef requires. Also, pulses are well-suited for agriculture in areas where water is relatively scarce. And because pulses don't require extra irrigation, and there's an enormous amount of good nitrogen balance here because, well, it works this way. When you're growing corn and soybeans, they take a lot of nitrogen out of the ground. Well, the corn and wheat should, but not soybeans. But here's where the pulses are unique. They actually fix their own nitrogen in the soil, meaning that growing legumes and pulses require little to no added inputs from synthetic fertilizers. And we know how bad nitrogen fertilizers are when applied to the soil. They release nitrous oxide as a byproduct and a potent greenhouse gas that contributes to agriculture's carbon footprint. And that excess nitrogen can be washed down from a storm into the major tributaries and rivers and lakes. And that encourages algae blooms and dead zones that can be destructive to marine ecosystems. And also the nutritional impact here is substantial. You're getting a high quality of fiber. You're getting high quality amino acids. And you're able to use the legumes in a lot of areas that wouldn't be growing anything. So it's good to use pulses. So that's one thing. Also, this is from Common Dreams. Quote, for 1 in 5 Americans, just having medical insurance isn't enough to forestall the damaging consequences of our nation's for-profit healthcare system. A comprehensive new poll from Kaiser Family Foundation and the New York Times finds that while an unsurprising 53% of people who are uninsured face problems with medical bills, a whopping 20% of working-age Americans who do have insurance are reporting medical debt that causes serious financial challenges and changes in employment and lifestyle. Now, according to the Kaiser Foundation, people with insurance, we're talking about fully insured people now, they are ending up, quote, with a wide range of consequences and sacrifices during the past year as a result. Here's what's happened in the last 12 months. 77% of the people who are fully covered delayed vacations or major household purchases. 75% of the people are spending less on food and clothing and basic household items. 63% are using up all of their life savings. 42% are taking an extra job or working more hours. 38% are increasing their credit card debt. 37% are borrowing money from family and friends. 14% are changing their living situations, and 11% are seeking the aid of a charity. Mind you, these are all people who are fully insured under the Affordable Care Act. So, what you're dealing with today is you're dealing with medical bills that are crippling people. When you consider the copays, the deductibles, the unexpected claim denials, and more, people are in a rough time. Quote, these financial vulnerabilities reflect the high cost of health care in the United States, the most expensive place in the world to get sick, so they say. So what's the situation? Well, when you go into just a mediocre hospital in New York City and you sleep in that bed for one night, it's $1,400 to $1,500. Now, that doesn't include the crappy food or the inefficient medical care. It's just laying in their bed for a night with no one to see you. A nurse not seeing you, a doctor not seeing you, an orderly, nothing. You're just laying on a mattress and probably one that's got some kind of infection in it. That's more than the Waldorf Astoria. You could stay a night in a suite at the Waldorf Astoria cheaper. How does that happen? How does it happen that you can pay $1,000 for a single pill and the same pill in other countries, identical pill, is $3. How is it that a procedure in a developed country like Belgium will run you $3,000 and $35,000 in the United States for the same identical procedure? It's simple. It's about profit. So I believe the only solution is to take the profit out of healthcare. If we were really evolved, if we really cared about people, we would do two things. We would have a national educational program on the real causes of illness and the best approaches, whether they're orthodox or alternative, to help a person. We would have universal health care for all. And that way no one would have to pay a penny for copays or anything else or deductibles. Whatever their needs, they would be protected in a civilized society. That is the only option. But because the insurance industry created Obamacare, affordable care, they wrote every single sentence of it, and because the pharmaceutical industry and the hospital associations want profit from our disease, and because we're getting sicker, not healthier, because we're living longer, which means that we're spending more money on sickness than ever before. This is the largest single industry in the world. In fact, let me tell you how big it is. We've passed $3.5 trillion this year. We're on our way now towards $4 trillion a year. And yet, we're not healthier, we're not living longer, we have more obesity, more diabetes in children, more heart disease in children, we have more younger people dying, we have more suicides, we have more people on meds, we have more people being diagnosed with different diseases that in fact don't even exist, like social anxiety disorder. It doesn't exist. But they wanted to have it exist because now they can diagnose it and they can classify it and then they can get paid for it. So at some point, we must stop the madness and reclaim our right and take it away from those who seek only to profit from our ignorance or our compliance or our hubris. That's my suggestion. And Big Pharma is now concerned, according to the Natural Blaze, Justin Gardner, why a new survey, quote, conducted by the Center for Addictions Research helps explain why Big Pharma is so afraid of cannabis. The pharmaceutical and alcohol industries, both powerful influences in Washington, have long lobbied against cannabis legalization in order to protect their profits. However, the tide has turned as decriminalization of medical and recreational cannabis sweeps the nation and the continent. With legalization, more and more people are discovering how this plant can provide a safe alternative to the dangerous effects of prescription drugs. In a survey of 473 adult therapeutic cannabis users, 87% of respondents gave up prescription medications, alcohol, and other drugs in favor of cannabis. Adults under 40 were likely to give up all three of these for medical cannabis. The most startling revelation, and one that will have Big Pharma paying close attention to its lawmaker friends, is that 80% of the respondents reported substituting cannabis for prescription drugs. In addition, 52% said they substituted cannabis for alcohol, and 30% said they substituted for illicit substances. So, we all know that we should not have a war on drugs. We should make them legal and controllable and provide in every community in America substance abuse free clinics where people come and they are treated, helped, and reenter society without the stigma of being criminalized. And by having inpatient and detox centers, this would protect a lot of people, millions. Secondly, we should realize who really benefits. Well, ever-growing bureaucracies like the DEA and Homeland Security, and think how many people died in the last 10 years in Mexico alone. Over 100,000 disappeared, over 80,000 confirmed deaths, and you better believe that those disappeared are dead, the vast majority, all because of drug trade. You take away the profit incentive, then the gangs, the people or the terrorists, no longer have that as a profit center. We should do something that actually represents a progressive step forward. But then in come the lobbyists for the private prison system and all the people who profit off drugs, and then you have these people like Bill O'Reilly and other dinosaurs suggesting that, you know, society become crazy if people are allowed to use their drugs. It simply isn't the case. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. And those are some that are important that I believe that we should pay some attention to. We're going to go to our guests in a moment, but first I'm going to share a couple audio clips, including Too Big to Fail, Too Big to Jail, and Too Big to Curtail. Please listen in.
Screwed you once. Here's how to avoid being screwed again. We have to bust up the biggest Wall Street banks. When Americans think of how the economic rules are stacked against them, they naturally think of Wall Street. When the Wall Street bubble burst in 2008 because of excessive risk-taking, millions of working Americans lost their jobs, health insurance, savings, and homes. In the big picture, when the financial sector expands, economic inequality widens. When Wall Street gets too much power, the rest of us often lose, and it's bad for the economy. Banking should be boring, not like going to a casino. The street is back to many of its old tricks, and its lobbyists are busily rolling back the Dodd-Frank Act, which was intended to prevent another crash. The biggest Wall Street banks are also much larger than they were in 2008. The street's five largest banks hold about 44% of America's banking assets. That's up from about 10% in 1990. And as they've gained dominance over the financial sector, they've become more politically potent. They're major sources of campaign funds for both Republicans and Democrats. What should be done? Well, first, resurrect the Glass-Steagall Act that used to separate investment from commercial banking. Also, put a small federal tax on every Wall Street trade to discourage speculation and slow down the casino. A small transactions tax would also generate tens of billions each year for, say, better schools. But the most important thing we should do is bust up the big banks. Any bank that is too big to fail is too big, period. Wall Street's allies will call it radical, but we've done it before. When the big oil trusts got too big in the early part of the 20th century, and the telephone monopoly later on, we used antitrust laws to break them up. The idea was to prevent too much economic and political power from concentrating in too few hands. And today it's happening all over again with Wall Street. The only sure way to stop excessive risk-taking on Wall Street so you don't risk losing your job or your savings or your home is to put an end to the excessive economic and political power of Wall Street by busting up the big banks.
And that was Robert Reich at the University of California, Berkeley. Let's now go over to Northern California, where Dr. Jack Rasmus, R-A-S-M-U-S, is standing by. He is a professor of political economics at St. Mary's College and Santa Clara University in California. And prior to teaching, he was an economic analyst for several global corporations and an organizer, negotiator, and business representative for several labor unions. At one time, he was elected at the National First Vice President of the National Writers Union. In addition to his economic profession, Jack is a playwright, and he is also focused on critical analysis of society. And he also has a program called Alternative Visions on the Progressive Radio Network every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. His website is jackrasmus.com. Nice to have you with us today, Jack.
My pleasure to be here.
Jack, I'm going to give you three threads, but they're all interconnected. One is that right now, most people are looking at Wall Street and the value of Wall Street with losing 1,000 points, but they're also saying it's because of China and because of China turning down the value of its yuan currency and also closing its stock market, even though that really wasn't that important, and that what goes on in China will impact everyone around the world and the BRIC nations, Brazil, India, China, South Africa, etc. And so people are very nervous now. So first I'd like you to talk about China and what's happening with the European Union and the fact that on the one hand we're told that the economy is doing great in other places. And I'm looking at numbers, and I'm not saying that. I'm saying that for the very rich, it's great, but for most people, it's not. What does that tell us likely to happen? Then I'm seeing enormous amounts of inventory. In oil, every single tanker in the world is now full and sitting, waiting for someone to unload the cargo. That means that they're not making money. It means that every oil silo in the world is full. It means we are over capacity, and it means the price of oil will stay down low for at least another year, year and a half. And that means a lot of people are losing hundreds of billions of dollars in oil revenue. That has implications. It also means that we're not buying a lot as consumers. We don't have the money because we're not making enough money. We're just barely making enough to make ends meet. So we can't afford to go out and buy, so therefore department stores are losing sales. We have 106 million Americans who could work who are not, and yet they're not included in the unemployment figures. So then we have people are saying, what the hell are we doing with 270 million Americans who do not have a viable future, have debt, can't get out of debt, debtors' prisons? And all the while, we have these individuals on television, MSNBC and elsewhere, saying, things are pretty good over here. Buy this stock. It's undervalued. Buy that stock. This is just a little blip correction in the market. It's going to come back, as it always does. And then I'm looking at the second thread, that is derivatives. And I'm looking at $247 trillion being held by just five banks. And I'm looking at these derivatives and I'm thinking, holy cow, if the market collapses out there, these derivatives are going to kick in, and then you're going to have the too big to fail banks that Robert Reich just talked about saying, hold on, you can't take your money out because you've bailed in. So we get all the money in all the banks in the United States, and we're looking at Citigroup. Total assets, $1.8 trillion. Total derivative exposure, $53 trillion. J.P. Morgan, total assets, $2.4 trillion. Total derivative exposure, $51.3 trillion. We're looking at Goldman Sachs, $880 billion in assets, but derivatives position exposure, $51 trillion. Bank of America, $2.1 trillion in assets, $45 trillion in exposure. Morgan Stanley, $834 billion in assets. Total exposure in derivatives, $31 trillion. Wells Fargo, $1.7 trillion in assets. Total exposure, $6 trillion. So you add it all up, you're dealing with $247 trillion. To put in perspective, that's more money than the entire planet. If you took every dollar, every asset from every economy in the world, put it all together, they have more in derivative positions, and that is considered legal and enforceable, and contractually we're stuck, and no one's talking about it. I want you to talk about it. And lastly, we've been told that there is a bail-in. The average American doesn't know what a bail-in is. Professor L. Ellen Brown in Web of Debt, who also has a program on Progressive Radio Network, wrote an article called A Crisis Worse Than ISIS, Bail-Ins Begin. And she says, quote, at the end of November, an Italian pensioner hanged himself after his entire 100,000 euros savings were confiscated in a bank rescue scheme. He left a suicide note blaming the bank where he had been a customer for 50 years and had invested in a bank-issued bonds. But he might better have blamed the European Union and the G20's Financial Stability Board, which had imposed a, quote, orderly resolution regime that keeps insolvent banks afloat by confiscating the savings of investors and depositors. Some 130,000 shareholders and junior bondholders suffered losses in the so-called rescue. The pensioner's bank was one of four small regional banks that had been put under special administration over the past 2 years. The $3.6 billion rescue plan launched by the Italian government uses a newly formed National Resolution Fund, which is fed by the country's healthy banks. But before the fund can be tapped, losses must be imposed on investors. And in January, the European Union rules will require, which is right now, that all depositors, all your money, is bailed in. You can't take your money out, no matter how much you have. So why in the world, Jack, are we not discussing with any intelligence and reason these three issues? Take your time. The forum is yours.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a large plate for discussion. But let me start with your first point. What's going on in China? Why is it important? By the way, listeners might be interested. My most recent book, just published this month, is called Systemic Fragility in the Global Economy. And you can buy it on Amazon, or you can go to my website, jackrasmus.com, and purchase it there. A lot of what I'm going to talk about very briefly at a high level here, you can get a lot of detail and a lot of the data and so forth in that book. Anyway, to begin, what's happening in China and why is it important, and what are its possible contagion effects on the U.S. economy, stocks, and et cetera? What we see in China now is a collapse in financial asset prices, which occur whenever you have an excess financial bubble that's occurred. Well, that began in 2014 in China as Chinese policymakers attempted to redirect all the excess liquidity and speculative capital that was causing havoc in the construction local markets, you know, housing markets, residential, commercial construction markets, caused a bubble there. They wanted to redirect that money because they weren't able to totally stop the bubble by other means, other policy means. So the idea was try to get this money to flow out of that bubble, including domestic and foreign speculators. That's a big problem, these speculators. My book estimates there's a new finance capital elite of about 200,000 very wealthy investors around the world who move their money around because it's an electronic financial system now, global, and they move it from liquid market to liquid market, drive the prices up, financial asset prices up in that market, take the money out and run. The bubble collapses, and they go, and they start another bubble elsewhere. There's about 200,000 of them. These are people with annual income flows of 10 million or more. This is the new financial capital elite, and their preferred institutions that they work through and own are called the shadow banks around the world. There's probably a growth of investable financial assets, I estimate my book for this group, from about $90 trillion in 2008 to about $180 trillion today. They've created all these price-appreciated financial securities of various kinds, and they're trading, buying and trading them. And they move into stock and bond markets and commodity markets and foreign exchange markets and so forth. So to get back to China, they after 2010-11, there were no shadow banks initially in China at that time. But now there's probably, estimates are 10,000 shadow banks. A lot of them are very small. Most of them are very indigenous. But the big global players have penetrated China as well. They do that through buying and selling all these commodities into China since 2011-12. And they sell the commodities in China, then they invest it in financial markets in China in currency. Well, in 2014, the growth strategy of China that was very successful from 2008 to 2012 began to dissipate. That strategy was direct government investment, building of structures in manufacturing and so forth, which is about 45% of the GDP at the time, and exports. It was an export-driven and an investment, government investment-driven economy up until about 2012. When we had our crisis here in the United States in 2008, the U.S. Recovery program was about $787 billion in 2009, or about 3 or 4% of U.S. GDP. China had a 15% of GDP, and it was all government and direct investment. So they recovered very well, had growth rates of 10, 12, 14%. China dragged the emerging markets, Brazil and others, that were selling at commodities, the semi-finished goods, dragged up those economies as well. There was a boom in China and emerging markets right after the crash. Not in the U.S., not in Europe and Japan. The money that was created by the central banks in the U.S., Europe, and Japan largely flowed out of the U.S. That's why we had such a weak recovery, and still do, and flowed into emerging markets or flowed into financial asset markets, both in the U.S. excuse me, and globally. When it flowed into financial markets, we got a doubling and tripling of bond and equity markets here in the U.S., and the rich got really rich in the U.S., and they got really rich by providing all this free money from central banks to China and emerging markets. It caused a real boom and a financial boom in emerging markets in China. It caused just a financial boom here in the U.S. It didn't get into real investment. It got hoarded on corporate balance sheets and bank balance sheets here in the U.S. Or it got distributed, all the free money from the central bank. Some of it got distributed to shareholders. In the U.S., all the stock buybacks and dividend payouts amounted to about $7 trillion since 2010. Well, no wonder the 1% got filthy rich in the U.S. because they got all that free money from the banks and the central bank and the government, and it didn't stimulate much of the rest of the economy. And they're still sitting on maybe globally, $5 to $7 trillion in cash. They're still sitting on it, and they distributed that much to their shareholders. But it's all financial asset growth and values that have occurred. Very little real growth. Well, China went through this boom in 2010 to 12, and then the economy began to slow down, and China began to fight with the speculators. But every time it tried to take on the speculators in its housing market, it slowed down its real economy. So in 2014, China policymakers decided, let's redirect all this money capital out of construction and into the stock market. Their stock market, the Shanghai and Shenzhen stock markets. And they did that. And in just a year, all that money flowing into stock markets raised their stock market values 120%. I mean, that's a real bubble. You know, when the stock market doubles, more than doubles, within a 12-month period, that's a real bubble. Can't be sustained. And then they attempted to pull back on that in early 2015, and they caused that market to collapse. So the government, by trying to deal with speculators, drove the stock market up by opening up the floodgates of margin buying and caused the bubble, and then they tried to check the bubble, and the bubble busted. That was last June it began, and what goes up 120% comes down very fast. They tried to check it in July and August by instituting controls on buying and selling a stock to slow down the collapse. They
Jack,
stabilized it a little bit, but in December it collapsed.
Jack, I need you just to tighten it up here. We're probably going to have to do this tomorrow as well. But let's leave today's show on this point. And when we return tomorrow, I'll have you on for a long segment tomorrow to talk about derivatives, the economy in America, the jobs not being here, the not reindustrialized America, the failure of European Union, other emerging markets. But just finish this one thing and very succinctly.
Okay.
Where today is China?
Okay.
Where is it likely? And is it going to have an additional negative impact upon the value of the market here and elsewhere?
Yes. Okay. Very briefly, we got collapsing stocks in China. We have a declining currency in China, and both are feeding off of each other. When the currency declines, the value of the stock declines, and people holding stock want to sell it. When they sell it, it causes the currency to decline even more. We have massive capital flight out of China moving to the West, hundreds of billions of dollars moving to the West, and it's the currency collapse feeding the stock market collapse, feeding the currency collapse, which is the problem in China right now. And the government can't get control over it. And there's a psychological effect as well as a real money flow effect to the West that is putting significant pressure on financial markets in the West, U.S., Europe, and especially on emerging markets. We have a
currency
collapse.
And what do you see as the outcome? What do you see as the outcome?
Well, the outcome is going to be more instability and further financial asset price declines this year. On top of that, we have the global oil collapse going on. So all these things are going to feed each other. So much more volatility and decline going on in both stock and bond markets. So we can talk about those more tomorrow if you wish. I thought we had a longer time. I apologize here.
Not a problem. What we will do tomorrow, I will set aside 40 minutes for you to discuss this in depth.
Okay,
so you've given us a very good beginning point to understand the volatility with China and the market, and you're telling us that it's going to continue, that the bubble is bursting there, and it's a big bubble, but also it's going to impact markets around the world, and including equity markets. And we will pick that up tomorrow because I want to know about what I consider the most lethal single element in the world economy, and that is derivatives. And no one's paying attention to them, and we should, because if there's another Bell bank out, you could lose your life savings in all these banks, irrespective of the FDIC and so-called protections that were given. So we'll talk about that tomorrow with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Jack, thank you for being with us today.
Okay, talk to you tomorrow.
And for all of you listening at the Progressive Commentary at 7 p.m., we're going to have a Professor Omid Safi. He is head of the Islamic Studies at Duke University and chair of the Islamic Division of the American Academy of Religion. And we're going to talk about Saudi Arabia Wahhabi history and Shia history, both religious, Quranic, political, sociological. Anything in that vein will be discussed. You'll have a really good understanding of what's going on in the Middle East at 7 p.m. tonight, Progressive Commentary Hour. Have a nice day, everyone.